Okay. Welcome, everyone, to this meeting of the Expanded Budget Committee. We're going to be discussing the parameters for our Community Recovery Fund. I note that we have quorum, and we can get started. And if Lisa is here, there she is, she's going to tee up our questions for us and tell us how we got here.
Hey, thanks, Deborah, and welcome, everybody. I just wanted to take a couple minutes to bring some of our new legislators up to speed, and probably all of us could use a little coming up to speed on this. So after the legislature created the recovery fund in the fall of 2021, we determined that we would, in order to administer the funds, we would issue an RFP for a consultant to manage the fund. And the legislature, so we came up with a draft RFP, and the legislature reviewed the RFP, and in about October, we posted it with the help of Jim Fabian, who's here with us, our, from the finance department in procurement. We posted it for 30 days, and in November, we had received three different responses from three different organizations. And the legislature chair at the time, named an RFP selection committee, which was made up of Amanda Champion, Glenn Morey, Henry Granison, and Dan Klein. And we convened a meeting of that committee along with staff from finance and county admin to review the responses. And what we found in our initial meeting, this was in early December, was that upon reviewing the different proposals, there was wide variation in them, and there were some clarifying questions that needed to be asked and needed to be determined by the legislature, because this is a program of the legislature. The committee, the smaller committee of legislators, did not feel that they could speak for all 14, and that it would make the most sense to bring those questions back to the entire group to answer and either come to consensus or vote on as necessary, so that we could then move forward and provide that information and clarification back to the vendors, so that they could then respond. So we have a series of questions, clarifying questions about the structure and intent of the how the legislature would like to move forward vis-a-vis this RFP.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. I think that's a pretty fair representation of where we are and how we got here. So the questions that we have to answer, I sent a document a week or so ago, and I resent it again today. I hope everyone has it. It pretty much outlines what the questions are and some of the consequences of answering them in a certain way. The first one, I guess, is, you know, how do we want to slice up the Community Recovery Fund pie? Do we want to create categories of grants, or do we want everybody to be competing for the same pool of money all at the same time? And I will just open that up for discussion. The sub-questions are, should there be a minimum size for proposals? Should all proposals be evaluated in a single category, or should we have classes of grants or classes of grants that can be applied for? So I will just open it up, and anyone who wants to begin to address this question may do so. I have Dan.
Thank you. I don't have a strong opinion about categories except the lower end. I really hope that we do have a low threshold that people could apply for a small amount of money. I understand that creates more, the same amount of work maybe in terms of accounting for it later on. But I would just hate to see, I don't know, a community group that doesn't have a lot of resources, that doesn't even look in a big, big project. Mm-hmm. I would hate to see them cut out of this process. So I don't have a specific thing in mind. Besides that, I don't have a lot of opinions. I just hope that there is at least one low category.
Okay, thanks, Dan. I kind of agree. We don't want to ace out these smaller groups that don't have access to much funding otherwise. So I have Shauna, Annie, and Amanda so far.
Thank you, Deborah. I agree with Dan. I think that we should have a pot for people that are asking for under $25,000. It is going to be more work for the agency that we end up hiring. But I think $25,000 and under, even if it's $10,000 or $5,000, I think that could really have impact on some of our smaller nonprofits.
Okay, thanks, Shauna.
Thank you.
Annie?
Thank you. I agree with what has been said so far. I think that's really important to especially the smaller organizations sometimes can be more impactful. They could be more agile in addressing issues that are really impactful to some people that really need it that might be missed by the larger organizations or the larger projects. And at this point, I am in favor of having pots of money for certain things because we have different priorities that we have as a legislature, as a county, as, you know, as a community. So I'd like to see different pots again, because some projects might be shovel ready and other ones might not. So I would like to look at categories. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Annie. I've got Amanda, Henry, Mike Sigler, Mike Lane, and Rich John. So, Amanda.
Great, thank you. It's going to be a long night.
Yeah.
I tend to agree. I don't feel like there should be a minimum. I feel like if an organization wants to apply for $2,000, that's going to help them with a specific project or, you know, paying a consultant or something like that. I feel like they should be allowed to apply for that. I don't feel real strongly about the other questions, but I guess I would lean towards not having categories just because I feel like that's a whole nother big conversation then to have. So what are those categories? Who falls into which category? How do we delineate that? So certainly doable. I guess I would feel like let's just stick with a dollar amount and, you know, that will sort of define who's going to apply. So I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Amanda. I would clarify that as the question was written, classes of grants were really defined by the amounts of money that was being asked for. Now, Annie's twist on that, which we certainly can discuss at some point during this meeting, is whether we ought to also have classes for different types of projects, like economic development versus environment versus, you know, you name it. Okay. Henry.
Yes, I think we ought to have, I agree with everyone, I think we ought to have an amount under $25,000. I think we ought to have an amount up to $250,000, and then an amount over $1 million, because we know there are projects coming in the millions of dollars. And so we should just have three categories. We don't know how many people are going to apply. And so then that will, again, help us segue through the amounts.
Okay. All right. I've got Mike Sigler, Mike Lane, and Rich.
Well, I'm just wondering if if we are committed to, I'm not even really that committed to having a consultant, but since we are committed to that, is it possible that maybe for, if we're going to make this into separate pots like that, it doesn't seem like we would really have to involve a consultant in the pots of money that are under a certain amount of money. Like if we're going to do, like Henry said, say a pot under $250,000. Well, do we really need the consultant to kind of dig into all those little ones? Why couldn't we run that one like the STPB, but then the ones that are bigger, maybe those you run as an OTR. I mean, I don't want to confuse this any more than it's already confused, but it would seem like, do we really want a consultant kind of nickeling this out of like a $2,000 applied for it? That would almost seem to be kind of a waste of a consultant's time. And they're going to probably bill us by the hour. So
yeah.
Just something to think about.
Thanks, Mike. That's a good point. Mike Lane?
To that point Mike just raised, the problem is if we don't have a consultant helping us figure these out, which is what we plan to do from the beginning, who is going to do that with these grants and who's going to follow up on them? I just think we ought to think of a pot of money here for the smaller ones, and I think most of us think that the smaller ones are desirable as well. Maybe there ought to be a floor, say, $1,000 or $2,500, for example. I would suggest, I'm throwing out a figure, but I think we ought to allocate $500,000 for the small ones, because we've talked about in the past trying to think of some bigger projects that could be what we call transformative.
Okay, thank you. And now let's hear from Mr. Transformative himself. Rich?
Yeah, you know, I worry with the small ones, it starts to look like our budget process, that we're just running lots and lots of little OTRs, and we will dilute the money. If we're going to do that, I think we do need to set a total amount, whether it's $500,000 or something else. We should try to contain it so we don't just pour the $6.5 million into a ton of small projects. Maybe that would be transformative to the community, but probably it wouldn't do things that in 10 years we'd say, yeah, that changed our community or our landscape in some significant way. So if we're going to do that, I'm interested by Mike Sigler's idea of trying to manage that on a more economic way so we don't spend a huge amount of administrative cost to spend a relatively small portion of the 6.5. But anyway, I'll stop there.
Thank you. Okay, I've got Randy and then Greg.
I've never been real fond of consultants, but I understand the need for that. And I don't want to debate the issues you guys have already debated. And I've looked through your minutes. But I do have a few questions. Does this have to be a grant process? Is that just to decide the way you decide to do it?
Well, alternative.
So my thought is you have a lot of intelligent people here. You have a lot of intelligent people in the county work here. And we represent our constituents. We have a good idea of what is needed. And I know areas in my district that are really need help. And there are some nonprofits and some aren't. So is it just a nonprofit thing we're focused on here, or is it any entity? So I'm just unclear.
Well, as to whether or not it has to be a grant program or not, I see your point about we all know things that are needed in our communities. However, knowing that there's a need and having the mechanism, the vehicle for addressing that, you know, we can't just throw money out there. There has to be somebody out there who's going to do something specific and concrete with that money to address a need.
Let me give you an example. Let's say childcare is an example. I think that's an issue for a lot of people, and it affects our county workers, teachers, and it affects a lot of people, especially when you're shutting down for COVID. it just seems to me that you would want to say, all right, well, we're going to figure out a way to help people with child care. I don't know what that is. I have my own ideas, but I'm one of many. I'm just trying to think of, you know, and I think it was Mrs. Robertson that said, you know, now's the time to help the community. We've been suffering for 2 years, and we're going to do this whole long process and get all these grants, and it's going to take time. So, and maybe there's a, so my thought is you break into 6 month segments, not a year, and you say, you know, we're going to do this in 6 months. We're going to do this in 6 months so that people kind of,
but who's going to do it? That's why.
Well, you've decided on consultants, so I'm not going to debate that. So the, and I think that in some of the lower, if you're going to reduce it to a lower dollar amount, a group of legislators can look at proposals $5,000 and under. I'll volunteer. I mean, I'm just trying to think how low.
Okay. Does anybody else want to take that up? Amanda?
That's two.
Yeah, I mean, Randy, I think you bring up good questions, and you know, we did have a lot of conversations at the end of last year, which is kind of unfortunate that, you know, now we're having those conversations again, but, you know, I think that a grant program is something that is fair for various organizations, and rather than it being what we individual legislators want, you know, yeah, there's a need for childcare, but I don't necessarily know how best to use that money or which organizations, you know, need money for what. So I think opening it up to the community and saying, you know, you nonprofits, you folks out there working on these things, you're the ones who are really in touch. Like, yeah, we're in touch with our constituents and our towns, but we don't necessarily know all the players in a given field. So, you know, saying, you know, you Child Development Council, you can give us a proposal to tell us exactly what you would use that money for towards childcare. And I think that's a fair process. And I think at the end of, or when we first started talking about this whole thing, there was some concern that legislators were sort of playing favorites, or, you know, whoever got their friends to send an application in first, they would be the ones to get the money. And, you know, it becomes a much more like competitive process between us. And I really feel like it should be a fair process for the community to tell us what they need. And then we go from there. So maybe that helps a little bit.
Hello.
Thanks, Amanda. Okay. I've got Greg and Shauna, and then Dan again.
I would tend to lean, I'm all for, you know, allocating a amount of funds for smaller, you know, grant requests and things like that. Tend to agree probably more with Rich and Mike Sigler on the administration of that. I mean, if you put $500,000 aside and $2,500 grants, you know, it's 2,000 grants, right? Or did I do my math right? 200. 20. What is it?
Yeah, it's 20.
20? 20.
Yeah.
No.
No, if you're $25,000 grants, 10 of them would be $250,000.
$2,500.
Oh, I thought we were talking
anyway,
about
$25,000. We don't have to debate my math. Rick Snyder's on the line. So, I'm just saying it's a lot of little stuff to, you know, invest in a consulting group to do. And, I just think there might be a better way. And, I also think, you know, if we look at some of our grant programs we have, we don't have a lot of grant programs that have, you know, 500,000 or more set aside. You know, I would be more in favor for like a, 250,000 or something like that for some of these smaller grants and really try to focus on, again, more transformative programs and in that million plus range.
Okay. Can somebody clarify for me? Are we talking about 0 to 2,500 or 0 to 25,000?
I was under the impression that there was a suggestion of a floor of 2,500.
No, I thought it was 25,000. That's why I'm asking for clarification. It came from Dan and or Shauna?
My assumption is that I think we should have a minimum of 10,000. I'm on the FEMA board. I've been on other boards before, and you're really not going to have nonprofits coming for $2,500. It wouldn't make sense for them to do that. So I think we should definitely put the minimum at 10,000. And I do hear what everyone's saying in regards to have legislators take over the smaller amounts. Quite honestly, I have some concerns about that because the whole reason why we're hiring consultants is due to the compliance aspect, as well as the accountability of it all. And whenever we start dealing with legislators getting involved and our staff getting involved, that really defeats the whole idea behind us going with a consultant. I also think it's important to realize, you know, we talk about maybe the staff hopping in. The planning department's down by 2 employees. You know, we've already talked about how many staff hours this could potentially take, and that's the reason why we're looking for outside help. So I would say that if we're going to hire a consultant, then we have them cover it, cover everything, because we also want to be equal in our accountability standards. We want to be equal in our accounting practices. At the end of the day, I think that we should be the ones deciding who is getting the money. But I think it is important to have the outside agency vet help people with the applications, and provide us with, even perhaps recommendations.
Okay. I have Dan, Mike Lane, Greg again, and Mike Sigler.
I think $10,000 is that's a number that makes sense to me too. I would support a range, but that sounds like a nice number. Randy, I want to let you know that when we first started this process, I made a pitch. What if we took each legislator got $100,000 out of the pot? So that would be $1.4 million. And each one of us got to decide where $100,000 of it went. I thought that would be really good, that would satisfy everyone. I got zero support for that. So
that's I wasn't looking for that, but I like you.
Somewhat similar, yeah. And then, but I also want to say, Shauna said this, but I'll just say in a slightly different way. The consultant is going to help us with the grant process and sorting, but they're also probably more important than that is compliance and accounting. And our staff told us from the beginning, they just do not have the capacity to do that. So when I hear consultant, yes, grant is part of it, but the accounting, the afterwards is, I think, more work.
Well, and bear in mind, they'll be accounting to us. So, you know, it's not going to be like having to comply with the Treasury regulations. So that was the main reason we didn't want to use ARPA. But there still has to be accountability. And I don't think our staff has the bandwidth, whether it's DPS or admin. They don't have the bandwidth to take that on. Just FYI. So now I've got Mike Lane, Greg, Mike Sigler, and Henry.
I don't need to repeat what's been said, but I totally agree with Shauna and what Dan just said, and you also, Deborah. We need this accountability and compliance. And take a look at the way the STPB grants are handled. We have staff that make sure that money is spent the way it's supposed to be, that the applications are the way they're supposed to be, and they come back. But as you say, we don't have the quote-unquote bandwidth to be able to take on a new set of grant program here for and assign it to administration or planning or whoever.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, Greg?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we were clear when we talk about accountability. And I think, Deborah, you would hit that one, that it's accountability to us and right, that there's not confusion that it's accountability to ARPA funds or to those regulations, that it's purely to make sure that it's administered as we would administer a grant program, but having a sort of a surrogate for that process and not it being a county employee. Because I don't want there to be any confusion that we're, you know, that there's a another entity that's sort of supervising or overseeing the regulations or holding us accountable to these funds other than good governmental practices and county policy.
And our fiduciary obligations to our taxpayers, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Okay, Mike Sigler and then Henry.
Well, I want to thank Greg for that, because that's kind of my question. The accountability is one thing. I'm a little curious. Is the word compliance keeps coming around, that I don't know what that means. So that's a true question. I'm not.
It means
compliance to what?
Can we address this? Because I'm wondering the same thing.
I suspect it's compliance means that if somebody says they're going to use the grant to do X, Y, and Z, they actually do X, Y, and Z. They don't do something else. But Lisa?
Yeah, and this is also, they're public funds. So the bottom line is they're for the taxpayer. From the taxpayers, and they need to be put toward public use. And I'm sure that there are other, legal and through the Office of State Comptroller, there are certain ways in which public funds can and must be used. So I would be looking also toward our partners in finance and county attorney's office. And we would need to work with a consultant to ensure that we're covering all those bases with the use of these funds.
Okay. Does that answer?
Well, we have a living wage policy, we have anti-discrimination policies. I was kind of assuming that any money we send out has to meet all those. That when we send out a contract, it is a really thick packet. There's a lot of policies that contractors have to meet. I kind of assumed that these recipients would also have to meet that.
Yes.
So somebody has to keep track of all that stuff. It's a big check mark. And maybe we should hear from administration. I mean, what's involved in a contract? It is pages and pages.
True. Yes, we have our contracts manager, risk manager, that works to cover those bases. Many of them you just mentioned, Dan, but there are several pages, and they do include anti-discrimination. You covered a number of them, yes.
Okay. Are you good, Dan? Okay.
I think so.
All right, Henry and then Randy.
Yes, I want to talk about two things. One, Dan, you talked about a living wage. We know many not-for-profits can't afford to pay a living wage. And so that would clearly be an issue that we deal with. Also, I know that Daniel Nolan brought up during our discussions about the right to appeal our decisions. And that's another reason why I think we should hand it off to a consultant with standard guidelines. Because if there's an appeal to our decision, we can't just say, well, a bunch of legislators got together and made a decision. We have to basically be able to say it was a standard decision. It was based on these criteria. And that's what happened. So I think that's also another wrinkle that we have to look into.
Appeal what decisions? The decisions to give a grant or not?
Yep.
Who are they going to appeal to?
To the entity that made the decision.
We are the entity that makes the decision. I don't understand. It's our money. It's our grant program.
But it's public funding. It's public funding. We cannot just deal with public funding willy-nilly because we're giving. Because again, the other OTRs, they can't appeal a decision. Well, the public can appeal a decision, can't they not? I mean, Daniel Nolan can talk about this.
Who brought up this appeal issue? And maybe they can address it.
Daniel brought it up.
Hey, guys. So this is when we were having a smaller discussion about this. If it is a grant program and you're opening it up for the public to apply and someone does get denied for whatever reason, they're – it is worth humoring the possibility that there is an appeal process for someone who was denied the grant.
But when you say there could be a process, it would have to be a process that we designed and built into the grant, or else the consultant did.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what Henry's saying.
Okay, so
every time somebody applies to the state for money and doesn't get the grant, they get the chance to appeal? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's true, but we're not the state, and I don't know exactly what the state does.
You think that is the case?
And it very well may be the case. I do know I do know that there are appeals process for certain public grants. That is true.
If I could, on that point, it seems to me that if a consultant turned down a request, the appeal would be to the legislature. If the legislature turned it down, then the applicant could take it to court.
Yeah, we would want to try to avoid that.
Well, of course. That would be the appeal process.
Okay. Randy.
It's just worth mentioning that, like, you know, and when you're opening it up to the public, and you know, I don't think anyone is going to apply, like just anyone and everyone is going to apply, but in theory they could, and to the extent which they can, there may be some disagreements with the way the decision goes down one way or another. This is something that a consultant would be able to provide some guidance on. Maybe there is no need for this because they have another mechanism that they can avoid the unfortunate circumstance of litigation or anything along those lines. But it is something to consider due to the fact that, you know, it is public funding.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Boy, that's great news. Okay, Randy?
I agree the $10,000 minimum makes sense to me. My biggest concern, you know, living in the district I live in watching how they get very few grants. They just don't have the expertise to even go after it. I know on the planning board, it was like pulling teachers to get them to hire a consultant to, I mean, because $5,000 is a lot of money to a small town. So that's my biggest concern is to how the process works. So maybe there's a way, and I've always thought this, and I think I discussed it with Katie Bergella a few years ago. We need help. We don't have experts that know how to write grants in our towns. They just don't exist. And that's the fault of the town. I understand that. So my thought is that, you know, the legislature should be setting, you call them classes, I call them priorities. I mean, this is the area that we are most interested in receiving grants for. Youth engagement, the environment, whatever it is. But I think, don't we know? I mean, I know I've knocked on a lot of doors. I know. People tell me what they're worried about. It just seems to me that throwing it out there, the people that know how to get grants, they're going to get them because they're experts. They've done it for years. They know how the process works. In our towns, in Enfield, Newfield, other than Gene Owens, who does a good job getting grants, there's not a lot of expertise there. So helping to know, you know, and I know what their needs are in general. I know youth engagement's a real problem in rural areas, big time. So I'm just not sure how you get there. And it's a lot of money. This is transformative money, which I saw written many times. So now's the time to transform.
I don't know how we build a program around solving the issues of disparate
grant every town 50 grand and tell them to spend it the way they think it's best.
I do not think we could do that with public money.
I'm just throwing it out.
We cannot do that with public money. Okay, so I have Dan and Lisa. Lisa, did you want to address Randy's point and then we'll call on Dan?
Sure. Yeah, that was, I was wanting to just state that in the RFP itself, we asked consultants to speak to how they would make special effort to work with entities on applying, how they would ensure a fair and equitable process, what type of support they would offer individuals or groups who needed assistance, and how they would specifically target underserved communities and work with them. So that was part of the RFP itself, and we asked consultants to speak to those issues.
I think that's the best we can do. Dan?
I think one other thing that we could do to that point is to make the grant application process as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. Simplify. I really hope that happens.
And I think that we have leeway to do that simply because it's our grant program.
As long as the consultant
understands that. Yeah. Okay. So, at this point, do we want to, consider a motion, to create a category for grants from $10,000 to $25,000? I mean, that's like a first step. And then we can consider how much of the fund we want to dedicate to that, and then we can move on to larger things. Does anybody want to make that motion?
I will make that motion.
Okay. Mike, are you seconding it?
Yes, I am.
Amanda, raised.
Yes, I would second it. I would like to see it also include the amount of money that we're going to allocate toward those grants.
Baby steps, Mike. Well, that'll be the next thing. I just want to get to agreement on one category.
I second.
Okay, so we have a motion. We have a second. Annie, did you have your hand up?
Yes. I know this is what we're going to talk about next, how much we're going to allocate, but I wanted to bring it up now. I would just like to be clear on what are the different size grants. So say we do 10 to 25. I just want to make sure, what is there one more category that we're going to devise, or two or three more categories? So I'd rather have those set out first and then go back and figure out how much we're going to put in each category.
Well, procedurally, don't we have to vote on one thing at a time? I mean, unless you want to try to hammer out a motion that covers all of those category ranges at one time, if that's your pleasure, people, let me know.
Well, right now, I think we're just voting on, do we want to have this category? And you said next we're going to vote how much you want to put in it. So I'm just saying procedurally, I'd like to go and talk about the tranches first, and then how much we would put into them after we get done with this vote. I didn't want to get in the middle of voting for the next thing and not say that.
Okay. Henry, did you have something?
Yes. I know that this is an issue we're going to deal with later on, but we've talked about how transformative this money would be. Do we think that actually a 10,000 to 25,000 grant is going to be transformative? Or are we saying by definition that we will open a range of transformative and otherwise non-transformative grants?
Yeah, I think that, I think the idea was simply that we don't want to foreclose right. the smaller organizations from having a shot at money that might be for them transformative, even if for the community it's not transformative. And the way we preserve the transformative piece, I would imagine, is to limit the amount of money that we're going to give out to these smaller grants. Make them available, but make it limited. And then we can move on to the transformative part.
Okay.
Okay, I've got Shauna and then Amanda and then Greg.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, are we able to do voting in this meeting since it's expanded budget?
Well, that's another piece of this that's a little confusing because it wasn't clear to me that we actually needed to have a resolution for some of this stuff. I got the feeling, discussing this with the small group and with Lisa, that what administration is looking for is just some guidance from us as to how to answer the questions that the RFP bidders have. And when we put the RFP out initially and we reviewed the Q&As, we didn't have a resolution. So I don't know necessarily that we need a resolution at this point. Lisa, what is it that you want from us?
Again, a clear guidance on how to consider these proposals that we've received so that the smaller committee can provide the information needed to the to the respondents so that we can judge their applications in a fair and equitable process so that they're all answering the same questions built on the same assumptions.
Okay, do you need a resolution for that or do you need the sense of this committee?
I think a sense of the committee.
Okay. Thanks for that question, Shauna. That's an important point to clarify. Amanda and then Greg.
Yeah, I would just add that not everyone was dead set that these grants had to be transformational. And we never voted that that was going to be the key category that that they had to transform something. And what's transformative varies from person to person to organization to organization. So I believe using that, you know, word is what some people really felt was important, but not everyone agreed on. And as to the process, I think personally that we should let the chair who's running the meeting sort of just go ahead and decide we're going to vote on this, then we're going to vote on that. Otherwise, we're going to be here arguing what to vote on next and what not to vote on. And I think that, you know, Deborah can walk us through the process and get us there. So those would be my comments.
Well, thanks, Amanda. You're my best friend. No, I mean, seriously, guys, I do not have a strong feeling one way or another how I want this to end up. All I know is that we've got to get through this. I'm just trying to get us through it. So I've got Greg and then Mike Lane and Dan again. Okay.
Yeah, so I think part of my thought process is coming a little bit of around what Amanda said, just trying to understand what is the right transformative, impactful, right? What is the ultimate goal with the community recovery fund? Because it does seem like there is some disagreement amongst the legislature. I just sort of honed in on something, Deborah, that you said about it's maybe transformational or transformative to the organization, not to the community. And I guess that was a question that I wanted to sort of take a step back and ask is this an opportunity, like when we're looking at these smaller grants, is it something that's going to be able to go for, you know, certain things, right? Certain administrative functions, or is it going to have to be specifically to make an impact within whatever community, small or large, that organization serves? Or is it something that can help just sustain that organization's general operation? So I think there is probably some confusion. Maybe it's just the new folks. Maybe it's all 14 of us. But just wanted to sort of seek clarity on some of those questions and some of the points Amanda brought up.
Well, I mean, I think it's really up to us to decide based on the recommendations of the contractor or consultant what we want to give grants for. I don't think, I mean, just speaking for myself, I don't think I view this as an opportunity to subsidize an organization's operating expenses. And this is supposed to be a community recovery fund, and it should be, the grants should address a need in the community. On the other hand, there's 14 of us, and we're not really good at agreeing on what we want to do with this money. So I guess my goal would be to try to structure this so that it meets the expectations and desires of as many of us as possible. And, you know, so we're going to end up with a camel and not a horse. You look puzzled. A camel is a horse designed by a committee. Okay. So we're going to end up with a camel, but that's okay as long as everybody's happy with some feature of the camel. All right. So now I've got...
As long as it has two humps.
As long as... No, it can have one hump. So I've got Mike Lane, I've got Dan, I've got Shauna, and I've got Rich.
To Shauna's point about the EBC, she's right. We can't take official action. Well, we can do motions, and the motions will inform our administration of what the sense of the legislature is. But it's all going to have to be reduced to a resolution that would then be passed by the full legislature at a regular meeting. And so if we pass this motion, for $10,000 to $25,000grants, then that becomes a part of the resolution, and then we move on to the next thing.
Fair enough.
And that's the way I think the only way we're going to get through this, because we're all going to want to talk.
Yep. Fair enough.
Good point, Mike.
Okay, Dan.
Thanks. I was going to make a procedural suggestion as well. I'm not sure if we need a resolution or not. It doesn't matter, but I think we should take votes today, and we need to call them straw votes. That's fine. I think that's perfectly fine with Robert's Rules of Order. And if there's a strong showing, let's say it's like 10 to 4 or more, then we're probably going to go with that. If it's 7 or 8, maybe we try it again and we try to reach a little more consensus, since they're not actual votes we're taking. That would be my suggestion how to go forward. Vote on each thing. If it's a clear winner, we go with it. If it's not, we keep working it.
Yeah. But we're never going to get that far if we don't vote. Okay. Shauna and then Rich.
Skip, please.
Okay. Rich?
Sorry about that. I think we should take votes, try to drive this along. I'm a little confused. People seem to be reacting to the word transformative. If it's not transformative, I'm kind of puzzled. What are we doing? Why would we be spending huge amounts of money if we're not trying to make real change as a result? And if we say no, we don't like that word, then we need to pick some other adjectives, I think, because we're going to have to give direction. So, I guess I wonder if we don't want to use that word, what are we going to substitute? So, yeah, let's vote.
Okay, so let's vote on having one group of grants for 0 to 25,000. Let's just, 10 to 25,000, okay? So, Kathy, you want to call the roll?
Sure. Shauna Black?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Dan Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Messi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shirtless?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Yay! Okay.
Well,
yeah, before. Oh, man, I'm so excited. All right. So do you all think we should talk about what the next category up will yes. look like size-wise and go through the categories before we figure out how much money we're going to allocate to each category? I'm seeing nods and thumbs up, so that's what we're going to do. What's the next range? Is it up to
25 to 100?
Well, how many ranges are you going to have?
And then over 100.
How does everybody feel about the 25 to 100? Shauna and Amanda.
Yeah, I would actually do 25 through 150. So I think there could be some 150s.
Okay. Amanda.
I was going to say 25 through 250 and then above 250.
That's
so
good.
We would have three categories.
That's
yeah,
great.
Okay, Henry.
I agree with Amanda.
Okay, so we're going to have a category that's $25,001. To 250, and then a greater than 250. Is that okay? All right, Annie and Mike Ling.
if we're going to vote on that, then I'm okay. Are we going to vote on that next?
Well, I just want to get a sense of what everybody thinks.
Okay, I'm good with that, those parameters.
Okay, Mike Lane. You're muted. You're very profound, but we can't hear you.
All right. I don't know if it needs to be chained. For example, I would think the next category ought to start at 100,000 to 250. I don't think you need to start at 25.
Well, then what do you do if somebody's got something that's going to cost $80,000? Do you want them to jack it up to 100 to meet your parameter? I mean.
Maybe.
I don't want to encourage people to ask for money they don't really need.
Violates the no jacking policy of the county.
The no jacking policy. That's exactly right. We got no jacking. But I don't know what.
Well, then why have a small amount? Why just not let them do anything they want up to
$250,000?
Wouldn't smaller amounts be a little more flexible? I mean, you're going to look at somebody that's asking for 250 a lot harder than somebody that's asking for 10. I would hope.
Well, yeah.
So when you, it's a way.
I mean, it's not going to be perfect, folks. Does anybody want to make a motion that the other two categories are the 25,000 to 250 and over 250? Okay, Veronica's making that motion. Greg, are you seconding or commenting? Seconding. Okay, let's vote on this and see what the sense of the committee is, and maybe we don't need to talk about the amounts anymore. So, Kathy?
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
No.
Mike Lane?
No.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
No.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
11 to
10, 10 ayes, 3 noes. 10 to 3.
10 to 3. Okay, I think that's probably enough support to put it in the resolution. So now the next question is, how much money do you want to assign to each of these categories? Annie?
I just wanted to say, going back, I realized after I said that I was okay with that, I would have liked to seen a top ceiling so that someone's not asking for $6
million. Yeah, but
maybe we'll figure that out as we're going through with the maybe that'll be part of the next step. So of that, like, you know, that you can have like this much money in this, but the maximum award could be, you know, this much versus you can ask for $6 million.
Well, I mean, you can ask for it. Doesn't mean you're going to get it. I guess that's one way of looking at it. I mean, that's kind of implicit in having a program where you announce to the public, we've got a pot of, I don't know, you pick a number, $4 million for grants greater than $250,000. I think you just sort of have to depend on the common sense of the public that they're not going to apply for more than $4 million. But,
okay.
I mean, I don't know that, I don't feel like we have to put an upper limit on it. In that particular case, what do you all think?
Well, Annie, what would your upper limit be? Did you have a suggestion?
For the larger tranche, I would put. I guess it depends on how much we're putting in there. If we're putting in $4 million, I would say maybe I'd want it $1 million.
Well, okay.
I would consider that.
All right. Mike?
I mean, I wouldn't put it in a problem just because we can always come back and say, no, we're not giving you $4 million, but we like the project. We can
come back with whatever amount we want.
Right. You can find a match somewhere else, which is another one of our questions. Yeah. Okay. I've got Lee and Mike Lane and Shauna and Greg.
I see one problem with an upper limit, and it's it really comes in the context of limiting ourselves. Suppose you've got several organizations that may want to band together to make a transformative project. We shouldn't tie our hands. We should leave some kind of flexibility so that you can evaluate an overall proposal and see how it really meets a community need that's identified. And if there's a serious issue out there that's a result of this pandemic, and, you know, 10 groups come forward and say that together we can transform and address a community need, and in the process save us some taxpayer dollars down the line, or keep us from incurring major expenses. We ought to have that flexibility rather than have some artificial number that constrains us. We should be looking for all the creativity that we could get. Suppose that we're in the realm of a number of child care centers that wanted to come together and create something in an umbrella. Suppose it were a number of food pantries that exist out in the community. You know, that's what I'm concerned about, is that we don't make these rules according to these fiscal categories that we're setting, and in the end defeat the purpose of doing something that meets some broad community needs. Thanks.
Thanks, Lee. Meg Lane?
And I certainly take Lee's point. My only worry here is, what do we tell the consultants? At what level should they turn to the applicant and say, no, that's too much. We can't even take the application for $3 million, for example. So the consultants have got to have some kind of direction for an upper limit.
Okay. Thank you. Shauna?
I agree with Lee. For all of this, I actually do not think that we should put caps on the number of grants that we provide for each category. I think what would make more sense is to accept all of the applications and see how many we get in each one, because the reality is that we, for the top grant, we might only receive one or two, and for the bottom, we could receive 50. And I think for us to make those determinations now would be really premature. As far as someone coming in and asking for all $6 million, I think what needs to be very clear in this process is that it is at the discretion of the legislature. And one of the questions needs to be, if you are not granted the full amount, would a portion of the amount still be helpful for the project?
Okay. Or could you, or do you have a potential source for matching funds?
Yeah.
Because I would hate to give somebody money and have them get halfway through the project and then come to us and say, well, we need more. And we may have more, we may not. So I've got Greg and then Annie.
Yeah, I would just support the idea of not putting an upper cap on. I think that just limits the community creativity and the potential impact of any projects proposed. I do have sort of three informational points I guess I'd want to ask. The first, if I just wanted to make sure I heard Shauna correct, where were you saying essentially, Shauna, not put a dollar amount on the categories in this conversation, but say, here's the three categories, here's the pot of money, and then we'll figure out later how to allocate it?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, just because we don't know who's going to apply. And I mean, you might have 50 people that apply for the smaller grants. I wouldn't want to allocate it and then say, oh, we didn't have 10 people come in and use the $150,000 that we've allocated.
Yeah. You know, I just don't think, I think we need to work backwards a little bit.
I do like that idea. My only concern potentially could be is if we do get a couple of groups that come in with larger proposals that have greater impact in the community, do we then not have any funds potentially left if, let's say, those are worthy projects, right? So would it make more sense to maybe set a little bit aside for some of the smaller grants potentially, and sort of leave the upper end ones more flexible? Not sure, but I'd hate for somebody on the smaller grant size to lose out on that opportunity. The other question, or two questions. First is, can we just be clear, just because it hasn't been stated in this meeting, how big the pie actually is that we're trying to cut up here? And then also,
6.53 million.
And where are the consulting fees paid from?
That's a question we have to answer.
Okay, so the pie may not be 6.53 million.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so we're still baking.
We're still baking.
Got it.
Thank God we've got Dan Klein. Nobody bakes like Dan.
You want to use a mix of different apple varieties. Keep going.
Okay, Andy, that was a good Amanda. Point, Greg.
One question, and then I have a suggestion, is do we have all the money that we can – are we needing to stagger this or wait for, like, the second tranche before of ARPA funds that to come in before we can give out some of this money? We have all the money.
We have all the money. We allocated it from our fund balance I think that was the meeting on September 15th. We made a one-time commitment of up to $7 million from fund balance.
Okay. So then I'm toying with the idea of, would it be helpful to make, I think someone said it earlier, I don't know if it was Randy, but like say we do something, you know, for a six-month period, and then 6 months you get to apply again. So that would, so like we do part of it now and then part of it later, or at least two different times for people to apply, just because some people might not be ready, you know, right away. And it's, even though we do our best to get the word out, you know, it's not always reaching every single person. And I do like the idea of putting tranches, a certain amount for each category, so that people and organizations, businesses, whoever is can apply, knows that they're not directly competing with bigger organizations. That gives them that sense. And if we did it, say, for 6 months, you get, here's one round of applications, and then you get, in 6 months, there's another round of applications, then we're going to know how much is left, and we could, you know, we could decide for the second one, like, hey, let's just open it all up because for whatever reason. So I would suggest around, you know, for the 10 to 25,000, just to get us started, 500,000 for that, 25,000 to 250,000, 1.5 million, and then the 250,000 plus the 4 million and whatever else is left.
Okay. Is that a motion?
Are we doing motions? I thought.
Well, yeah, I have a feeling the only way we're going to.
If it is, I'll second it.
Okay. So do you want to repeat that, Annie?
Sure. So it would be approximately two application periods for the grants, 6 months apart, and for the first tranche of 10 to 25,000, I'm proposing $500,000 for that.
Okay.
For the 25,000 to 250,000, 1.5 million. And for the 250,000 plus 4 million and whatever else is left.
Okay, so here's the thing, Annie. So that adds up to 6 million.
Yep.
You want to break that up into two tranches. So how are you going to break, what are the tranches going to look like in terms of the application process? You want to do them 6 months apart. You're going to divide those in half?
I haven't figured that part out yet.
Well, okay, so let's just say your motion is that that's how much money you want to assign to each of these categories of grants. It's less than we actually have dedicated to the fund.
A consultant fee.
A $530,000 consultant fee?
It's going to be about half that of it.
Okay.
Well, I said the $4 million would be $4 million plus whatever we have left, which we don't know right now because the consultant fee needs to be taken out of there, possibly.
Okay. So that's the motion that's on the floor. And Randy seconded it. Now I see hands. Do you want to speak to Annie's motion? Okay, so I've got Amanda, I've got Henry, I've got Greg, I've got Shauna.
Yeah, thank you. I was actually going to bring this up too, and I think this is in the idea of simplifying, I don't think this is a good idea. We did talk about this at the small group because it is a question of, you know, if people aren't ready. But for me at this point, I feel like we've been talking about it so long. Even though the actual application isn't out there yet, organizations know that this is happening. Mm-hmm. I think they should be able to put an application together. It's still several months out, you know, before we do this. And I think, you know, Shauna said earlier about like not having an upper limit or something. And if we get all the applications at one time, we know what we have, what people are asking for. And therefore, we know we don't have to figure out like, oh, only this much can go into the small ones. And then there's these three ones who want really big ones. And, oh, actually, we could work that out. So I'm pretty strongly in the camp that we should just do it all at one time. People have been talking for months about getting this money out the door as quickly as possible. I think that we need to just do it all at once.
Thank you, Amanda. Okay, I've got Henry, Greg, and Shauna.
Yes, I know that Ann's idea would also raise the consultant's fee significantly. And I know that way back when last year, we actually, because I remember looking at some of Deborah's notes, that there was a motion that made this $15 million, not just $7 million. And so we also talked about that, about raising the amount of funds, which I assume no one wants to dive into now, but that's another way of dealing with this, is to do two tranches. Because, you know, we're getting two tranches of the ARP fundings, and that we can basically do another tranche of splitting it, in fact, maybe $10 million and splitting it back $5 million each. But again, I think that Ann's idea is good, but I think it's also just going to be cost us much more to administer.
Okay, thank you. Greg and Shauna.
So, yeah, I guess first thought is I don't like the idea of two tranches for, I think, some of the reasons Amanda stated and others. I think, you know, it's about time we get this ball rolling, and we have a chance, and we need to act on this. I also think $2 million I'm going to lump them in on the lower two, the up to 25 and then the up to 250. My suggestion would be is to those two tiers allocate, say, $1 million to 1.5 million. That gives us, to Shauna's earlier point, some greater flexibility. It allows us, I mean, because 1.5 to a $250,000 grant. I mean, that's a sizable grant for some of the organizations and some of the projects, you know, so it's not like we're just going to get 10 of those, right? We're going to have a lot of little in these buckets. So I would be more in favor with, you know, $1 million, 1.25, something on the lower end, and then leave the rest open. And then to Henry's point, let's say we get this overwhelming response for an incredible, proposals. then we can go back and have the debate about how much money was put in, or, you know, if we should put more money in and invite, you know, those folks to do it again. But really, I think some of that conversation needs to happen once we see what the response is from the community, because all reality too, unless you get a couple of big requests, you could potentially not get the full amount of requests. You know, that's a reality too. I don't think that'll happen. So I would actually make a motion to amend Annie's motion, if that's an appropriate time, if that's not too complicated for an expanded budget committee, that there only be one tranche, and that we lower and group the lower two tiers, I'll call them, the up to 25K and up to 250K, to 1.5 million for those lower two. And the rest would then be allocated to the $250,001 plus.
Okay, so there's a motion to amend on the floor. Does anybody want to second that?
Could we separate, Greg? Would you be willing to separate your motion? Because there are two separate ideas there. Might be a little easier to handle.
I mean, if the motion fails, then somebody can make a different motion in that spirit. Right.
Okay, Mike Sibler seconded there. Does anybody want to address the amendment? So I have Shauna and Rich with hands up. And Veronica, who wants to address the amendment? Do all of you want to address the amendment? Shauna does.
Yeah, so I like the amendment, Greg. The only thing that I would change is, instead of $1.5 million, I would like to see that at $2 million.
I think that's a second.
Well, you can't amend an amendment, can you?
It would have to be friendly.
If that's the general consensus that would change with two, then I still think it's a lot. But if that's what makes this process easier, then yeah. Friendly, I guess. I don't even actually think that's a thing, but I'm not opposed to it.
Greg, could you repeat your proposal again? Sorry.
Yeah, so it would be for the lower two tranches, right, the up to 25K and up to 250K. There would be one chunk of money, up to $2 million, now that we'll call it, and those, you know, could be $2 million in the lower one and none in the other. It could be whatever way. One pot of money for those two tranches. And then over that, the remainder would be for the 250K plus. And it would be one application cycle, not two.
Okay. Rich, you had your hand up before Veronica. Do you want to address the amendment or the motion? Or
I had something else. I was just going to say we should be prepared for the possibility that we get crappy applications, and, you know, I mean, we might need to say no politely, but, you know, we don't want to just get the money out the door because then we're done. I think we have to be judicious about it, and I doubt we're going to get the exact amount in each category in terms of requests. We may need to turn some people down because it was competitive, or you know, maybe we wash some money back from one category into another. We just have to be prepared to do that if we have to. So, yeah, I like what Greg is proposing. But frankly, we may need to do a resolution in 6 months to move it around.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. Veronica. Veronica and then Greg.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with what Rich just said, and to Greg's thing first, I am not a fan of combining the lower two, what are we calling them, the classes? I feel like tranche is meaning two different things, right?
Yeah,
now.
Tranche means different, yeah, classes.
So the three classes of grants, I think if we put a dollar amount to the lower two classes together, then why did we even have two classes, which we already decided?
Yeah.
Instead of two separate ones. I think that, and I think it would be incredibly disheartening, say, to have applied for the smallest one, think you're competing against other people at that dollar value, just then to find out actually nobody who applies to that dollar value got any grants, and they all went to the next category up, which you were told was a different category, but it isn't really. So this is why I'm not in favor of that. And then this is, I'm not making a formal motion because we're layers deep, but what about to balance the like wanting to allocate some money to each of the categories, but also needing the flexibility because we don't know what kind of proposals we'd get? Would it make sense to have like a minimum, like smaller than the dollar values that Annie said, but a minimum amount for the smallest class and a minimum amount for the middle class?
Ooh, middle class grants.
Perfect.
A minimum number of grants, you mean?
No, a dollar amount. Say maybe like at least like $200,000 will go to the smallest class, and at least like $800,000 would go to the middle one, but the rest could go in any category at all.
Well, let me just offer something here. I'm against, I think, assigning dollar amounts to any of these. I think I agree with Shauna, which is unusual actually, that we just need to wait and see what comes in the door. Because ultimately it's going to be up to us to decide which grant proposals we're going to award and which ones we're not. And until we see what comes in the door, we don't really know what the competition is. So I guess I'm not really in favor of Greg's amendment because I'm not really in favor of Annie's motion. So that said, I've got Mike Lane and then Dan.
I agree a lot with what Veronica said. There's really no sense in having one tranche of money for two classes here of the bottom two classes. And that's why I wanted to have a break between them. But I think $2 million for those two classes is too much. I think if we had a $500,000 for the smaller one and $1 million for the next one, would make a lot of sense. But if Deborah, if you want to hold back on allocating any money here, I just think it's going to give a little more trouble for our consultants to try to figure out how to what to send to us. And having said that, I'm sorry I'm going to have to leave prior commitment, but you guys are doing a great job. You really are. You really are.
Oh, I feel like we're not making much progress at all.
Yes,
thanks, Mike. Okay. So Dan, and then Greg's got his hand up again.
I lean towards the Shauna model of just open-ended, no dollar amounts assigned to the categories. But if we are going to vote on dollar amounts, Greg, friendly amendments are a thing. They're in our rules. They're not in Robert's rules of order. I would wonder if you would consider an amendment to yours, which is this. You said everything and above goes in the final category. The problem with that to me is that doesn't leave any money for the consultant. So the earlier category that Ann had suggested had $4 million for the top category, which leaves approximately $500,000 for the administrative expense. And I think that's probably the right neighborhood of money we need to leave aside. So I'm wondering if you would consider amending your amendment to not saying everything and above goes into the final category, but capping it at $4 million.
So I probably fall into the camp of we should have put more money into this. So the fact of setting $500,000 aside from this for consultants, I probably take a little bit of an issue with. So I don't necessarily know where I fall. I would say that the remainder should be for other expenses or for, I mean, you can leave it open-ended so we can then vote on that later without making that clear now. From a separate point, I like what Veronica had to say about a minimum threshold, because I do think everybody who's advocating for not putting buckets or caps or an amount or clustering together, then everybody's really just competing for the same money, and that playing field is completely out the door, and the consultant's job is going to be an absolute disaster, because if three people come in with great $2 million ideas, what if they say, hey, these are the ones, right? So I think the idea of one bucket is counterintuitive to the argument of why we shouldn't cap the lower two. I would be open to the idea of looking at I think a minimum is tough to Rich's earlier point because we don't know the caliber of groups that we're going to get. But I do think that these funds, these should be a guideline and parameter, and there should be the ability. Let's say there's $2 million or $3 million worth of great ideas at the 250 and below. The consultant should be able to make that recommendation to take money from one allocated class and say, you know, we recommend you spend another million in this category because there's great programs here, and have the ability to move that back and forth, as opposed to just being so locked in that like they can't suggest anything. And I think the other comment though would ultimately have the ability as a legislature to decide. Some of the other notes that I see further down in the document that was circulated earlier was that the legislature may not see grants that aren't, right? I know we haven't decided on that, but we may not get the full picture of all of the applications if part of the consultant's role is to sort of weed through those and make sure they meet criteria. So I don't know. I just said a couple of different things, but Dan, I don't necessarily know if I would want to allocate the remainder of the 6.53 or whatever it may be to consulting fees. I think we have a healthy fund balance and we should look at paying for the administrative costs in some other way.
Well, that's a question we will be getting to. So I have Lisa and Amanda.
Thanks. I just in an effort to be helpful to this process, I think the conversation that you're having and the details and the pros and cons of each decision are, you know, there are pros and cons to each approach that I think everyone is seeing as we're considering them. And I think for our purposes, to help with the assumptions that are going behind our decision making in choosing a consultant, this is helpful information. We probably have, in my mind, sufficient information to provide back to the consultants. So for instance, if a consultant was thinking, okay, my proposal assumed that we were going to be making a total of four major grants of $1.5 million each, we can say no, the will of the legislature is to divide it more evenly, and we could leave it or more, you know, we could divide it into three different tiers and approximately, you know, between this many and this many grants. And what we can do then is bring that information back to the consultant who the people that we're working with will have plenty of this professional expertise and then can probably come back to the legislature with some proposals more sharpened and give us the pros and cons of each approach to help guide and make these final determinations. So I'm offering that as a potential solution to not have to get into the weeds of all of the details tonight, but provide us with sufficient information to bring back to compare the proposals that we currently have. I hope that's helpful and not muddying the waters further.
So we're not stuck in meeting hell until midnight. Okay. All right, Amanda and then Bill Troy.
Yeah, that is helpful, Lisa. Thank you. I was just going to suggest that we ask Greg and Ann to take their motions off the table and go back to separating the two questions. We have the question of should there be one or two tranches, and then the question of should there be money allocated to each of the tiers. And I feel like, you know, there's so many different things. Greg brought up a lot of things which are questions, but we can't get to those questions until we get through these steps. So that's my request.
That's a good one, Amanda. It'll be less confusing if we deal with things one baby step at a time. So what do you say, Annie and Greg?
I'll take mine back, and I like the idea because it sounds like we're going to do a little bit more consensus building versus trying to do it through the resolutions. So I like that. Thank you.
I'd like to get to the question at some point. So sometimes lumping it together and calling the question, you can get a sense of the body faster than some of the conversation. But I guess I have a seconder, and are you comfortable removing us and separating the question?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
If his was an amendment to mine, though,
his is automatically off the table, I think.
Right.
But thanks, Greg. another thing that Greg's comment brought to mind is that I think one of the questions we can address tonight is, are we taking the consultants' fees out of the balance of the fund? Because I think it's important for us to have made that decision. But I will let Bill speak before we get to that.
I've been fidgeting a little bit as I listen to your discussion, not because of what you're saying, but because of what it signifies. Some of these grants can be big dollars, seven figures. And I could easily see two nursing homes coming in saying, we need the money for our renovations. I could see some real estate developers come in saying, this is cash. We already have a lot of cash. We can get some more cash. And I can see the potential for real fights starting if you grant something to one and not the other. So as I'm sitting here listening to all of you, I am thinking to myself, what does transformative mean? What do you do in a situation like that? How do we choose one nursing home over the other for renovation work, or one realtor over another? And I just, one of my principal functions in life is to keep my clients out of litigation, as much as I love litigation, but... And I don't have an answer for it. I myself don't have an answer for this, which I find almost disturbing that we're tossing this around, and yet nobody's defined transformative, and we have to take this into account when we choose a consultant, see what experience they've had with this. And, you know, it could be an absolutely frivolous lawsuit, but it's a lawsuit you're facing, or the threat of one. So I'd like us to keep thinking, how do we avoid even the L word of lawsuit? And we have to think these things through, practically speaking, because not everybody is going to come to you is going to have a good heart. Okay. They may smell seven figures, $1 million here, and there's going to be a brawl. And I want us to be prepared for it. Further I sayeth not. I didn't mean to rain on your parade or anything.
Let's put on Amanda two questions.
Actually, the way I see it, there are three questions that we need to address. Are we going to do this all in one grant cycle?
No.
I mean, are we going to have one cycle of applications and we're going to decide it all at once, or are we going to divide it up into two tranches?
Should we try raising our hands and see if we
have okay. So that's fine. Who wants to do it all at once? Just raise your hands. Okay. Can we count that? Let's see. We've got four here, five, six, seven, eight,
and ten.
Nine. Okay. All right. So one grant cycle. And let me just editorial. Huh?
Does that mean it's all paid out in 1 year, or maybe a 2 year proposal, 3 year proposal?
No, if we have good quality proposals, we'll pay it all out in 1 year.
Okay.
Let's
say we ask for $500,000 to run their program for 2 years. So is that something you would understand?
Well, they don't have to come back and apply again for the second year. If they've got a proposal that's going to take them two or three years to complete.
Okay.
If you look at when we first discussed this, we were kind of tracking the ARPA.
Yeah, it's something moving money up to 2025.
Exactly. But we don't need to do that in multiple grant cycles.
Okay.
And yeah, I just want to, the money has to be spent by a certain time frame. Yeah, we haven't defined that, have we?
I think that we decided that that was going to be the same schedule as the ARPA. So they have
to. So that's December 2024?
I don't remember what they were, but there was a couple of categories of when they would have to
get the money,
use the money, and be done with the project or whatever.
Right.
I kind of recall committed by 24, spent by 26. I don't know.
Yeah, 24 and 26. I agree with you, Veronica. Okay. But the other thing that we need to remember, and I hate to open this can of worms, Elisa's probably never going to speak to me again, but this is not the only time we can do this. If we, you know, for the benefit of the new people, we will not really know what the status of our fund balance is, probably until April or May, because it takes that long to close the books on 2021. But if it turns out that we're swimming in cash again, and it's the will of the legislature to take some of that and either add it to the fund we've already created or have another round of community recovery fund next year, so be it. I mean, this doesn't necessarily have to be the end of it all.
That's in your list already.
Yeah. So, you know, just bear that in mind as well.
We had another vote, didn't we? We have another.
Okay, so we're going to do one grant cycle, and then what was the other one? How much money?
Should we limit any? Should we make any limitation on the categories, or is it open-ended?
Right. How much goes into each category, or is it just there's no amount for each tier?
Okay, so the first question is, do we want to have amounts for each tier? So if you're a yes, raise your hand.
One,
is that a hand or is there?
Two, three, four, five, I think. Five.
Can I ask, are these necessarily like fixed amounts? Like this is the amount for the tier, no more nor less will be spent on that tier? Is that what we're voting on?
Oh, Veronica, I have no idea. I mean,
that's starting guideline.
That's another question that we have is the amount of money flexible? And Deborah just said, I think it could be. We could have another cycle in 3 years. We could, you know, these are questions that we have to go through. A lot of it is spelled out in that document. I think we just have to take these little steps of each vote.
You know, my one concern is that if we set amounts for each tier of grants and we leave it open for ourselves to say, well, yeah, this is the amount we're setting, but, you know, if we get a whole bunch of really good proposals in the middle class tier, you know, we can expand that amount of money and take it away from one of the other classes of grants. If that's what we're going to do, what's the point of setting amounts? Or is the point of setting amounts making it easier for the consultant? And maybe Lisa or someone from staff can answer that question. I don't really know.
Why don't we just vote? We've already had this discussion, I think, and debate, haven't we?
Okay.
I feel like we have.
All right.
I feel like we just start voting and move through these questions.
So, but in all fairness, we've got hands from Annie and Rich.
So, if we're looking at, or if some people are looking at not having categories or not having amounts for each category, I am definitely in favor of having amounts for each category. As I said at the beginning, then we're back to someone coming in with a $10,000 grant is really competing with somebody with a $2 million grant. And I'm just thinking if I'm not a consultant or a lawyer or anything or an accountant, but I'm just thinking if it was me there as the consultant, having that leeway there, then I'm comparing the smaller ones with the big ones. Whereas if you took the $10,000 to $25,000 ones that we talked about, if you have a pot of money for them, then you're comparing those $10,000 to $25,000 applications with the other in that same amount. Otherwise, it's why have the three categories? We might as well just have 10,000 and above. And everybody's competing for each other. And at a minimum, I would like to have the smaller amounts, especially the 10 to 25,000, have even someone talked about before, streamlined application and follow-up requirements for them to have much less than the cumbersome one we're going to probably want if somebody gets a $2 million grant. We're going to want a lot more follow-up and accountability for where that money's going and where it came, how it was spent. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I've got Rich, Greg, Shauna, and Randy.
I agree with Anne. I was going to say basically what she said.
Okay. Greg?
Yeah. I agree mostly in spirit with Anne and Rich. I think two points I want to make. First, I think our grant application needs to be consistent with our other county grant applications across the board. And the idea of an express or light or something, I think if we're talking about accountability to ourselves and fairness to the process, we have certain grants, everybody's thrown out the grants run through SDPB and HHS, I think. Those grants, for $7,000 or $2,000 are, it's a pretty standard, common grant application form that's used to my understanding. So I think we should just be pretty consistent across the board, on that, just to Bill's point about the L word, we just need to be cautious in how we're sort of approaching all of those grants and make sure there's consistency throughout the process, because we don't want other grant applications to go, hey, should we change the way we do the grant application and make this express version because we're only asking for $5,000 in the future. I don't want to open that can of worms. My other question to the idea of flexibility between categories or classes, what if we committed to say, hey, for this class, we're going to commit 500 and this one, we're going to commit 1.5, but we'll also commit to spend at least 50% of those funds in that category. That sort of addresses Veronica's point. That gives us sort of a range to work with. It gives us sort of a floor that says we're going to commit this amount. And then it also gives the ability to sort of slide within, because maybe there's only, that amount in those categories. And if there's money remaining in those categories, we potentially open it up to another cycle, or they move elsewhere.
That's a good compromise. Shauna.
Yeah, so I'm going to combine everyone's ideas. I like Veronica's idea that we combine the two classes. And so we have a 10,000 to 250,000. And then I would actually accept Greg's notion of having that be 1.5 million minimum, because I don't want three developers coming in and a handful of people saying, yes, let's go with the developers, and the other people in our community not having access to this. At the end of the day, it's going to be a vote of eight that decides where this funding goes. And I want to definitely secure the fact that we use some of this funds for our smaller providers and our smaller nonprofits. So that would be my proposal.
I think then that Veronica was against lumping the two lower tranches together, because what's the point of having two different classes if they're all going to be lumped together competing for the same money, which is very logical. Okay. Where the heck are we? Wait, Randy.
I agree with Ann. And Greg's point of the grant could be up to $500,000 for that category, or up to 1.5. You can just word it that way. But I think it's really about messaging. And that's why I'm really for the lower tiers. Is I think there's one thing that the county doesn't do well. Is they don't message well to the people. And there's a lot of information out there, and you bury people with it. I know, go to the website. But the people that have no clue generally what the county does. And so I think this is really a good chance to message to the people, especially the people who feel disenfranchised, people who will ask for smaller amounts. They'll test the water. So if you allocate a certain amount of money towards those categories, I think it gives a good message. That's why I'm for it.
Okay, so let's go back to where we were half an hour ago. We had $500,000 for the lowest category. We had $1.5 million for the middle category. And we had $4 million for the upper category.
Is that a motion? I'll move it.
But I'm going to add Greg's wrinkle. I think it was Greg's wrinkle, which was that
up to amount. Right.
It's up to those amounts, and we commit to awarding at least 50% of each of those amounts to the grants in that category. So if we change our minds later because of, you know, the quality or quantity of the grants we get in each category, we have some flexibility. So I guess that's my motion.
What about the
point of information?
Yeah?
You mean qualified grants. That if we got really crappy grants, we wouldn't say, well, we have to spend half.
No. I don't feel that I'm somehow or another compelled to hand money out to people just because they showed up.
Qualified grants, then.
Qualified grants, yeah.
Thanks.
That's $6 million.
That's $6 million. We don't know. We still haven't voted on how we're going to pay the consultant. You know, if we have extra money at the end of the day, we can carry it over till next year, or we can add it to a pot where it will do the most good. So that would be my motion. Can I get a second? Veronica seconds that. Okay.
Can I just clarify what it is?
Sure.
So it's $500,000, $1.5 million, and $4 million.
Right.
And we're committing to awarding at least 50% of each category. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Well, to qualify. I mean, okay. If we don't have 50% of worth of qualified applicants, then we don't. Yeah.
And the extra 0.53 goes to Lansing. Okay.
All right.
Move it on.
As long as the town shares it with the village, we're fine. Okay. Let's vote on that and see if we can get somewhere. Kathy?
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shirtlift?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
That's 12 ayes, 0 noes.
Very good.
All right. So the next thing we have to talk about, I think, is are the consultant fees going to be paid out of the amount of the funds that we've committed to this program? And I don't think we need to have extensive discussion. It's either yes or no. Veronica?
Question. If they don't, where do they come from?
Then we'd have to appropriate it from somewhere else. And I would expect that we would take that additional amount out of fund balance.
Ooh.
Okay. So how do we want to
vote for including it or vote for adding?
Okay.
Point of information.
Yes.
Was there a range provided from the consultant? Like, what are we What are we talking about?
It's like 200,000 on one end and 1.6 million on the other. But the 1.6 million, I think,
was an outlier.
Was based on a really excessive view of how involved and for how long the consultant would be involved. Dan.
So yes, most of them were in like the 200,000 range, I think, give or take. But some of the answers to these questions we have may affect their fees. So we just need to, in my opinion, we need to be a little flexible on how much money we're leaving aside. I don't know if it'll raise their fee a lot or not. I really don't know, but, you know, it may a little bit.
Okay. Randy.
I've read quite a bit of what Lisa's written and spoke about fund balance over the last few months. And in the county's in good condition compared to most counties, I would assume. So to the point, if we do vote to just take that money out of the actual $6.53 million, to your point, at some point later, if we decide we have a significant fund balance, it gives us flexibility that
we can add more in.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Sorry. That was my question.
Okay. I've got Lee and Henry and Shauna, and then we're going to vote.
Just a point of clarity. I wasn't clear until Dan talked. The RFQ or something had already gone out. You've had responses from consultants and they've given you a range. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, that's why we're here, because there was such a wide range of response that clearly we needed to add clarity to the RFPs so people had a better idea of what they were responding to.
So presumably you'll be judging those responses now based on the parameters we've set since the RFQ went out.
Yeah, well, the bidders are certainly free to adjust their bids based on the additional information we provide after this meeting.
We're going to take this information and give it to the four respondents, and then they're going to modify their proposal. Does that sound about right, Lisa?
Yes, accurate. That's accurate.
Okay.
Okay, so I've got Henry, Shauna, and Greg.
Yes, we originally put this fund in for $7 million, and we took out $470,000 for budget purposes. I'd hate to see us take out lower it to like $6.1 million or whatever. We said $7 million. We should address it as $7
million. Okay. Shauna?
Thank you. So if I remember correctly, the reason why we took out funds is because there were projects that would have gone through this process, and it was voted during our budget that these would have been projects that more than likely would have received monies from this recovery fund. So just to be clear, that's how I remember the process. Other people might remember it differently. But I would also mention that while we think we might be rolling in tons of money, there are things that are going to be coming up, including the salary study and us having to probably add $3 to $5 million in order to meet the numbers that our salary study could bring forth. And that will be an ongoing expense. So I just want to keep that in the back of everyone's minds, that we will have some of those expenses. Perhaps even in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I remember it as you do, Shauna. And I would remind people that there were some of us who only voted for those OTRs on the condition that they be charged against the amounts that were put in to the Community Recovery Fund. So I have Greg and Mike Sigler and Annie.
Yeah, I just want to be clear. We got $19 million, right, in ARPA funds?
Yeah.
And then the thought of is that doing the cash for capital swap, we would save somewhere around
$1.6 million a year. Debt service, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that that's out there in this forum so that there's full context. So, you know, for the benefit of new and old folks. I also think that, we should absolutely pay for these consultants outside of, this money that we allocated because of the fact that the logic that I heard at the beginning of the meeting was we don't have the staff bandwidth. And we don't have the capacity. If we had the staff bandwidth, the conversation may be to not use those folks and we could do a what would that be? An OTR budget adjustment that would come through and we'd have to pay that out of the fund. So I just think it makes sense to pay it out of that and not lump it in with these funds, especially because these funds have already been reduced if they would have gone through this process or not. But those groups, to Shauna's point, those groups that sort of went through, those allocations that went through, they didn't necessarily have the same process to go through as other applicants would. So I don't necessarily know if it's an apples to apples comparison because those were sort of already just decided without this process, without seeing the full picture. So I kind of agree with Henry's point. Long way to say, I think we should pay for it outside of the 6.53.
Mike?
I was just going to say that I think you and Shauna actually both kind of undersold it a little bit. The OTRs, as I remember it, I mean, these were OTRs that really were affected by COVID. Like these were losses. Like
right. This
is, we looked at the chart and said, wow, yeah, this was an impact. So it was more than just, they would have qualified under this grant proposal. These were exactly what the ARPA funds really were intended for in the first place. This is a problem. This addressed that problem. So just,
thank you, Mike.
Giving you a bolstering
your
point.
You really want that extra money for Lansing.
Hey, you know, this is how I'm
doing your job.
Doing my job.
Okay, Annie. I'm not sure where I'm feeling about the money, for the, consultants. Part of me is kind of wondering, well, so if they know that this money is coming out of the pot, I don't know, will that affect something? I don't know, but I just wanted to also be a voice and as one of those who did not see all of the OTRs that got taken out of this fund already as applicable to what we're deciding today. They were, so at least a couple that I'm thinking of, you know, might not have been pandemic related. There were other reasons for it. So I just wanted to put that out there. We weren't unified in thinking that these were things that we're going to, they would apply for anyway. To this program.
Okay, a couple of thoughts on my own behalf. I don't think it matters that it wasn't unanimous. I mean, we do a lot of things by a majority vote, and the majority felt that those were projects that we only approved because we could charge them against this particular program. And my second thought is that when we approve funding for a program, we approve funding for the cost of implementing it as well as however much money we're going to give out. So, my feeling is that these funds need to come out of the funds that were allocated to this project. And if we are in a position to fund more in the future, we can vote on doing that. Randy, I saw your hand.
Yes. What if we said something like we would allocate up to 5% of the total $6.53 million towards the consultant? That way you've got a number on what you're allocating towards it. It would be $300,000. That way you're not all of a sudden committing $1.2 million or wherever that consultancy is. Just thoughts.
So that's a third option, that we would commit up to X dollars. Okay. So this is going to make raising hands a little more difficult.
Sorry.
That's all right. So what's your pleasure, folks? How do you want to proceed with this?
We'll call the simplest question,
vote
right?
On what? Say what?
Call the simplest question, which is essentially, should it come out of the funds or not? If you answer that question, then you can answer the other question of, should there be an allocated amount out of those funds, you know, not to exceed?
Okay, good idea. So the question on the floor for Mr. Mezzi is, should any of the payments to the consultants come out of the fund? And Kathy will call the roll. How do we want to word the motion?
Can we just raise hands like we did before?
Yeah, okay. So who thinks that some or all of the consultants' fees should come out of the fund? Raise your hand.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Out of 12. All right. So that's not exactly a resounding majority. Would
Randy's resolution help some of the no votes get to a yes?
Do you want to ask those that are opposed or abstaining, or are we just doing straw poll for?
Yeah. If we said that we were going to take 5% of the fund and put it towards the consultant fees, who would be in favor of that? Raise your hand.
One, two, three, four, five, six. We lost somebody.
Okay. All right. So, So we don't have a majority of the legislature or the people here voting one way or another, and that's a problem.
I guess it's the number I just heard when you talk about 5% of upwards of $7 million, and I would have a hard time conceptually if we were looking at spending $350,000 and we ended up with, say, 15 grants that fit neatly into these categories. I don't know if you're setting up an hourly rate or if you're going to lock into a certain amount for the consultant at the onset, but the scope of work may very well change based on the applications that come in.
Well, but that doesn't address the question of where's the money going to come from. Okay, I've got Amanda and Shauna.
Would some of the no votes be okay with the idea of some portion of, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about, a percentage, but say, you know, if the consultant fee is $400,000, we take $200,000 out of the grant money and the other out of fund balance. Would like that sort of thing work for anybody, or just trying to come up with a different idea? Or you really just don't want any funds coming out of the grant funds? Greg is nodding. Okay.
Okay, I got Shauna and Annie.
I think one thing that we could do is have this question come up in our legislature meeting, the first, because at least all 14 of us will be there. I have a strong suspicion that Mike Lane will not want the funds to come out of our fund balance. Are we missing one other person?
Travis.
Oh, Travis. Yeah, so it would be good to hear from those two.
Okay. Annie?
Yeah,
I'm okay on waiting to talk about this if we're going to bring it up with the legislature.
Okay. Moving on. We've sort of addressed other questions in the process of our discussion. The one thing that we have not addressed is whether we want to use the OTR model or the STPB Human Services Coalition model for evaluating grants, grant proposals. Dan.
This is the only other thing in this list that I have a strong opinion about. I really think we should use the OTR model. In the STPB/HFC model, we get a package, a bundle of projects, and we vote yes or no. And I could be wrong, but I don't remember ever anybody pulling one out, modifying it, adding one in later on. Maybe we've done that. We just like say yes or no. And I've always felt frustrated about that. And the OTR model, on the other hand, every one of us gets a vote on each one, and I've lost plenty of OTR votes, but I don't feel frustrated by that process at all. That's a fair process. That's what it is. So that's what I personally really want to see is we get to vote on each proposal that's approved, you know, that clears the qualifications by the consultant, and then we just vote yes or no.
Okay. I have Veronica, Henry, Mike Sigler, and Amanda.
I agree with Dan less passionately. I wanted to bring back, I don't remember who, but someone said earlier, at least what I got from it was a lot of our decision making seems to be hinging on, well, we don't know what the proposals are going to be, and maybe we'll rethink things later after we see what comes in. So if we choose a model where we don't see what comes in, that would be an issue. So for that reason, I would be in favor of that we get to at least see everything, even if we're not necessarily doing the, like, vote as a group of 14 on everyone.
Okay. So that's kind of a hybrid model.
Hybrid or OTR.
Okay. All right, Henry.
Yes, the reason why we don't pull out the ACOG funding is because we trust the STP board, and I'm on
it.
Wait,
Henry, say that again.
The reason we don't pull out ACOG funding is because we trust them, because they've gone through a much more difficult analysis. Which we're doing right now in ACOG funding. Me and Greg are doing ACOG funding right now. And so that would be the similar process that we delegate to consultants, and then we could look at everything, but we would honor their commitments. And so I think that would be the appropriate thing as opposed to OTRs, which we would have, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how it would work because we don't have a county administrator approving them or not approving them.
Okay. Mike Sigler.
I was just going to say, I love the STP model. I mean, that really is a great model. I love it, using it. But the way this has evolved to this point, I don't see how we can actually use it. So I would support your OTR model because, I think with the consultant and the way this has kind of come from where it was to where it is now, I don't see the STPB model actually working for this. So that's it.
Okay. Amanda.
Yeah. I totally get the desire and the wish for folks to want to look at every application and be the ones to make the decision. And if that's what happens, that's what happens. But this is going to be a lot of paperwork. It's going to be a lot of reading. It's going to be a lot of, you know, meetings where we're, you know, finagling over little things and debating. And personally, I don't really want to do that this summer or this spring. I would rather have a small group of legislators like Dan, who's very passionate, Veronica and Mike and whoever who want to do that and have the time to spend really going over those details and then come to the full legislature and say, okay, here's the best ones. Let's approve these. And then I would be happy to read through those. You know, so I don't feel as strongly that I personally need to read every application because I have other things I want to do in my life. So I think the STPB model really would work.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I've got Shauna, Annie, Henry, and Greg.
So I would support the OTR model. I think that the funds that are going to be going out the door, all 14 of us are going to be responsible on how we send the money out. And I certainly do not want to allow the consultants to make that decision for us. And then I look around this board, and I think all 14 of us have very, very different priorities. And to make that board diverse enough, I think it would be really, really hard to get everyone's opinions in the group that they selected. So I think the OTR, it is time consuming. But I think we, it makes sense.
Okay, Annie.
Thanks. I agree with what Amanda said. This is you're talking our time, tons of time. You're talking expanded budget meetings, not like this, but where we have more staff than this at those meetings, and so we wanted to have, I was thinking we wanted to have streamlined this, and I am still hoping that we're going to streamline this so there's less amount of staff and our time that are taken up by this. And don't forget we do have limited staffing just about everywhere, and this is an extra thing that people are, this is adding to a lot of people's work assignments for the coming year. So the most that we can, you know, minimize it and trust the people that we have to sort through this, do a good first pass, I'm comfortable with.
Okay, thanks, Annie. Kathy wanted to say something.
Sorry to interrupt, but it was brought to my attention today for staff that's at this meeting. They're going to be doing a network maintenance at 8 o'clock, ITS department. So I would recommend that you save anything that you might be working on. I didn't know if you were aware of that or not.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Henry, Greg, Sean, is that an old hand or a new hand?
Yes, I'd like to ask Bill Troy about the notion about if we do it the OTR process, and again with Daniel Nolan's concept of this is public funding, whether the legislative voting on this, but that if someone wants to appeal that, how do they appeal that, and does that avoid litigation?
Those are two good questions. I don't have a good answer for you right now, but I'm always in favor of avoiding litigation. I let me look at it. I'll get back to you, Henry, if I can. I can't give you an answer now.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Greg?
Yeah, so my concern with something that was brought up about creating a smaller committee is we just spend time reducing our committees. For the reasons of staff and legislators' time and things like that. Is there a committee of the legislature that these consultants will report through, or is every time there's a question?
BCP.
So it is BCP.
Yeah.
So should this go through BCP for the first pass from the consultants and then go to the full legislature? Because we do already have a committee structure in place rather than special ad hoc committees. You know, it would just be one of my thoughts. I'd be opposed to adding a new committee, but do want to make it clear that there is some sort of committee so that it doesn't always have to come to all 14 if there is a question or, you know, something needs to be addressed through, you know, from the consultants.
Yeah, it would go through BCP, but I don't know that anybody's suggesting that BCP would be the screening committee. I guess I'm a little confused by this discussion because if we want to be the ones, the 14 of us, that look through every grant application and decide which ones we're going to award and which ones we're not, what exactly is it that the consultant's doing?
They're collecting them.
Well, that shouldn't cost us six or seven figures, should it?
They're going to advertise it. They're going to collect it. They're going to do the first analysis.
Okay, so there will be a recommendation. It'll be a lot like the budget process where we've got the county administrator's recommendations, and then we can add or subtract as we see fit in our infinite wisdom.
Well, it depends on what we want the consultant to do.
Okay.
Isn't their job that so these are the proposals that qualify based on whatever parameters we set, right?
Okay, Dan, you?
Yeah, I just want to address a couple of things that came up. I don't want to read every application start to finish. That is not what I'm proposing. That's not what we do in the OTR process, unless you call the paragraph we get the proposal. That's what I would imagine reading through. It's not 40 pages, is a half a page. I guess I would ask the consultant to prepare that for us, give us a summary, or maybe the applicant would have a first paragraph summary. So I just want to be clear, I don't see it as a huge time commitment. It's going to be some time. I want to remind you what our OTR process was. We went this past year, I think we went through like 30 OTRs. We voted on like 30 separate things, somewhere in the range of like $2 million. It took us 5 hours. So is that time commitment? Yes. Is it like endless? No, we do it every single year. I just don't find it that onerous. I don't see how it's more work for staff. Somebody mentioned that. I'm not really clear on why that would be. And then as far as the committee, you know, if we keep using the phrase OTR process, we don't have an OTR committee. It all just comes to all of us, and we just vote one at a time. And that's what I'd like to see here.
Okay, any other thoughts? All right, let's vote. Oh, wait, Lee has his hand up. There's a party pooper in every crowd.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting startled here. When I start hearing about applications being that long and going back to the talk, a little bit to what Randy had to say earlier, if you've got a small group out there that's asking for the $10,000 or $25,000, are we going to drown them in a multi-volume application? Or is there a way to streamline this process so that we can find projects that meet a demonstrable community need? This lends back into my fear on the cost to the consultant. The more complicated and the more expansive we make the application process, the more we're going to spend out of whatever fund we decide to take it from. But it ought to be fairly easy for this astute group of legislators to see where the community needs are and prioritize them and fund them.
Okay. Thank you. We need to hear now from the astute Mr. Granison.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm in a position to vote until Bill Troy gets back to us about the litigation aspect of it. Because I don't think it makes sense to vote without knowing which one, you know, caused us to have more litigation.
Well, but my feeling is that regardless of which of these processes we decide to use, our litigation risk is more or less the same, although Bill may have a different thought on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any great difference between the two of them, the two different processes. So I wouldn't hold up for that. It's a nice question you ask. It's hard to predict the future, but I'm not sure you're at greater risk with OTR.
So the legislator votes basically to deny funding and there's an appeal. What will happen with that?
Well, any resolution denying funding for somebody probably should have a nice rendition of why you came up with those reasons in the resolution.
Right. Which how are we going to do that? Because the OTR process does not allow us to give reasons of why we're voting against something down.
We've also never been sued on an OTR or an FDPV grant or a Human Services Coalition grant. I'm not sure where this fear is coming from.
Because it's an outside entity applying for public funds. It's
so not all those. So every single one of those.
Well, not every single one, but all the Human Services Commission. Yeah.
Every category.
What would happen is you'd have a transcript, presumably, of your deliberations, and you'd explain there what was going on. And you could, you know, just make sure that you place on your record what your particular feelings are about it as a group. And if it's clear that somebody is defaulting or has defaulted before or is defective, that can be cited in the record. So it doesn't just come from the final vote. It's the total amount of proof that's in the record. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes, although I don't know that we're gonna record and record each OTR, because we don't record each OTR now.
Well, we're going to have to pass a resolution, no matter which. We're going to have some formal document, no matter which process we follow, that memorializes our decision to award a grant. So, and as Mike is about to point out,
we do this on the IDA. I mean, people apply for tax breaks, which is basically public money.
Right.
And we shoot them down, and I suppose they could sue us. I don't know what they would sue us for. Right?
No one ever has.
It's our decision.
The only thing that's unique about this is I'm not talking about a $25,000 grant. Nobody's going to get involved in a fight over that. I'm just concerned about the big money, the seven figures, if you get into those kinds of tussles. And there, I think you just have to be meticulous with these big applications, is that you make sure you have clear record as to what was discussed at the meetings when you reviewed it. We can go back to the record and say it's clear what the legislators were concerned about. And you'll also have a professional helping you review these documents, and you'll have their records as their recommendations to you, hopefully in writing. You could ask them to give us in writing, on the bigger ones, what their opinion is and what do they base it on in terms of their recommendations. So you can create a record in any system.
And you should always create a record in any system. Yes. Because you don't want to get sued.
Right.
Exactly. Rich.
And I don't want to scare everybody getting sued, but I always have to think about it. That's all. And if the bigger the money involved, the more likely someone is to try to rattle somebody's cage by threatening a suit or bringing a suit.
Okay. Rich, you had your hand up.
No, it's been said.
All right. Okay. So I guess we should, what?
Did I steal what Rich was going to say?
Perhaps you did. So let's vote. All in favor of the STPB model, please raise your hand. Okay, that's 3, 4. All in favor of the OTR model, please raise your hand. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh, great. Again.
I think it was 8.
It was 8?
I don't know if Greg Messi raised his hand.
Greg didn't vote.
Okay. We're just taking straw polls, right? I guess my question on the SCVB model is, it's the consultants making a bundle of recommendations. I didn't want to raise my hand again, but it's the consultants making a recommendation. No. And then we're voting on that recommendation.
That's not what I understood.
Well, the STPV model would be yes. We would not see the proposals that were not recommended by the consultant.
And there would be one vote. That's what the STPV model is. One vote, not 30 votes.
I'm sorry. I just have to clarify, because that's not what I understood. It would be a small group of legislators who would be going through the applications, not the consultants. It would be, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 legislators who really want to read all the applications, who then bring that back to the rest of the legislature. That was what my impression was. And that's what I thought we talked about in our small group back in November, whenever that was.
No, it's in the document that we're working off of. The STPB model, only the recommended recipients' amounts are reviewed and voted on by the full legislature. If we follow this model, our consultant would review every grant proposal and forward only the recommended proposals to the full legislature. Whereas the OTR model, every grant proposal that is submitted by applicants would be reviewed and voted on by the full legislature. That's the choice we're making.
Okay, well, I missed that, and I don't vote for that. I vote for my idea, where there's a small group of legislators who form a group, who go through the applications, and then bring that back to the rest of the legislature.
Okay, Greg?
So this is why I didn't vote, because I didn't think it was clear on what we were voting on. But my thought on the OTR model is there – So what you just said, Deborah, every request for this would be reviewed and voted on, right? Is that of qualified grants? Is there any screening? Is there any, is the consultant opining on any of this and saying, we would recommend these three grants over these three grants for these reasons? And that's what we're then voting on in the individual?
Or is it essentially
a 14-person grant review committee?
I think they could certainly do that. Certainly, as somebody mentioned, they would be reviewing the applications to make sure that they meet the minimum qualifications. Because I would be surprised if we didn't get some grant applications that just for some reason did not meet the minimum qualifications. Lisa, you have your hands up, so I'll let you butt in here.
Thanks. Just a couple of thoughts too, that with the OTR model, there is quite a bit of behind the scenes work and vetting to get the OTRs to a point for review by the legislature. And there are OTRs that never make it to the legislature because of that back and forth process, and sometimes a challenge that is this really needed, or what about this pot of funding over here? And some, you know, by process of elimination, some of those are either taken care of or withdrawn because they weren't fully thought out. So that's one item for consideration. These grants that I would envision, the applications may be a bit bigger than the one paragraph OTR blurb that are reviewed by the legislature. There'll be pages for consideration. So that's one item. The other is that review process, it's a question as to whether that initial review and vetting process would be subject to open meetings law. And do you want that vetting to occur on the floor of the legislature or in a subcommittee? Or, you know, when you talk about a small group of legislators, you're talking about an open meeting potentially. So do you want that work to be done by a consultant, that initial vetting, and then another product brought to you?
Dan?
I mean, that's what I'm looking for, is the consultant does some preliminary work. I can't exactly define it, but it involves a minimum qualifications. It involves some kind of ranking, some kind of commentary, whatever. And what they give to us is not the whole application. It's a It's a paragraph or a half a page. So yes, Lisa, it's a good point. I think a lot of us understand that there is a lot of work that goes behind the scenes. By the time the legislators see the OTRs, that's what I would expect the consultant to do. That's great dinners. There's jambalaya. And I guess the other thing I want to say, it wasn't in this list, and some of you may not have read it. I responded with an email that said the one thing that was missing in here for me was the idea that the key difference for me is the OTR process is multiple votes. The STPB process is one vote. That's it. Yes or no for the whole package. And I don't feel like I'm doing my job if that's what we're talking about for this.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't love that, you know, all or nothing on their recommendations option.
Can we take a break?
We just wrap it.
We have numerous more questions we have to answer.
Do we? Well, I didn't get the impression from Lisa that we had to answer all of these questions. But
are we going to have to at some point?
Yeah.
What's left, Lisa?
These are the questions that we felt like we needed answered from the small committee before we could really go back to the consultants and then get more information. So we could set up another of these meetings.
We could chew our fingers off too.
I think we better answer the match question sooner rather than later. That's a kind of a key one. Right? Before an applicant sees, you know, before an applicant submits a grant, that it's kind of an important one.
We also need to know about the follow-through.
I don't even know what they are anymore. This is my third meeting today.
This is OTR.
Yeah. Well, we didn't get a conclusive vote on the OTR versus STPB issue, so I don't imagine that anybody's mind has changed.
Well, I think we got some.
Yeah, I mean, I would be in favor of the OTR model as further described with the consultants vetting and essentially acting as the grant review committee and giving a full list, right? If they recommend deny to something, you know, we can go through that whole list. And if the legislator wants to pull that out of denied and award it some funds. But I also think that making an award like this just off a paragraph and not actually respecting the work of the review committee, to Henry's earlier point, is slightly problematic. But I would support the OTR model as described with the review from the consultants if they essentially act as a hired grant review committee.
Okay, do we want to vote again on the OTR model as Greg just clarified it for us? Everybody who's in favor of that model, please raise your hand.
Which one are we voting on?
Well, the one Greg OTR. Just described.
OTR.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. All right, OTR it is. All right, now, Dan, you want to tee up the match question?
Can we take a break?
Sure, we can take a break. Until, let's see, 8:05. So let's go. So now we're on what question, Dan?
Matching. You want me to tee it up?
Yes, you may tee it up.
So basically, and there's other people here that have done grants, so chime in. But it's a simple question. Do you want the applicants to have to put up some money and or in-kind match? And grants are all over the place. 50% is a common one. You could do 20%. Some of our highway things are like 5%. It could be zero.
Well, wouldn't it vary? I mean, and the other thing to consider is that you may not want to have a match requirement for certain classes of grant.
Yep.
application. Like, for example, match requirements make much more sense for the upper class of grant for $250,000 or more. I certainly personally wouldn't want to have a match requirement for that bottom class, the 10 to 25. The middle one, I'm kind of indifferent. It's such a large.
Could that be part of the qualification process that we're going to look stronger at people that are doing matching?
Thank you. That was the other thing I meant to say is that, yes, it can be part of the thing of what will you bring to this project, but it's not a requirement. That's another option.
Right.
I like that one, Randy. Did everybody hear that? You want to repeat that, Randy?
So the thought was that, you know, as we look at these applications, that one of the values would be higher if they were putting a matching amount or matching something else into the game. So it'd be, you may look at that proposal stronger than someone that did not.
Okay, that's a good one. Annie?
What do you think about just asking what percentage of the project? I mean, it's not always going to be a project, you know? So if it is a certain project, like you're going to build this or you're going to do this program, I guess under those circumstances, maybe we would be asking, or we could ask, what percentage of that X, Y, and Z would this fund? Because then we know they have to get the other money from somewhere else. But there could be times where this, you know, it's not necessarily a program or constructing something or building something new that this might not apply to.
And I'm not sure I understand. Can you try one more time?
If we're asking, I think you were asking or someone was asking, do they have matching funds for what? I guess I don't understand for what.
No, they're asking money for.
Right. So they could be asking, you know, to help with something that happened during COVID. This is a COVID recovery fund that some of these are going to be for building things and some of them are just going to be like, we can't continue with this amount of deficit. This would give us to be able to get back on our feet, you know? And so
the match in that kind of case would be something like this. We'll say county will give you this money. If you can also find that money from United Way or the Park Foundation or something else, like some resource from somewhere else too.
But they could have already done that. So what, you know, that's, I mean, any organization, if it's, you know, if they're saying, hey, we, you know, we've used this money, we've used that money, then this is, could be the last place they need we could be the last ones filling that hole.
Amanda and then Henry.
Sorry, I'm chewing apple pie.
Did you use a variety of apples in it?
I purchased it at Wegmans. Today is my stepdaughter's 24th birthday. So, my question is, what is the benefit to us and our program of requiring an applicant to have a match? I honestly don't know. What is the benefit?
Well, I can answer that. If you'll recall back when we first started talking about this, one of our goals for this program was to find ways to leverage the money we kick in so that our $1 million may result in $1.5 or $2 million worth of benefit. So that would be, it would be the leverage factor.
One other thing is the skin in the game concept, you know, not free money. You have to earn it. You have to bring something yourself.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Henry.
Yes, I'm against this for two reasons. One, this is supposed to be for COVID recovery. And we're asking people to give up funding, to put in funding for COVID recovery, which is the very fact that we are giving recovery funding. Also, the other OTRs that you gave, that you did last year are not required to do that. And so again, you're getting different standards for different timing or different organizations. They're not required to give any funding and they don't have any skin in the game.
Yeah, that is a good point. I think that Randy's proposal actually is the optimal solution, that we advise our consultant and we bear in mind ourselves as we evaluate these competing grant proposals that we attach an added value to a proposal that includes a match from some other source, because that leverages the money that we are contributing.
It wouldn't disqualify one that didn't. It wouldn't disqualify.
But if you were weighing two
right
proposals, that might be a deciding factor. Mm-hmm. Annie?
So as I said, I don't know if it was clear, I would be okay in asking that as a question, like if appropriate, you know, does this whatever, are you getting funds from somewhere else, match the matching funds for something else, if appropriate. But if it's not appropriate, then it's not appropriate. I don't think it's not a deal breaker.
I didn't say it was. Greg?
Why not just add a question? Or, I mean, I totally agree that if other funds are already committed to a project, it makes a project a stronger project. If they have to go out and secure additional funds, I don't know if that matching component is great. So I would just be specific in saying, you know, have you already secured funding or have you applied for funding, you know, something like that. But it's like two questions. It's what additional funds have been secured for this project already or proposal? And, you know, what have you applied for or would you need to apply for, you know, to complete this? I just think just knowing that, I mean, it just goes into the weight of the overall sort of grant application. But I don't think we should have a matching requirement.
Right. And that's what Randy's proposing, is that it's just a factor to be considered. It is not a requirement. Is everyone cool with that? I see thumbs. I see nodding heads. All right. What else? I turned this meeting over to Dan. He's been working on this longer than I have. Okay, I do know one that we do need to give Lisa some guidance on. And I see your hand, Rich, so we'll get to you. And that is, how much follow-through are we expecting from our consultants? I mean, how long are they going to be on the hook to follow through, and what happens if a grant recipient drops the ball and doesn't do what they say they're going to do? So that said, Rich, what'd you have?
I was going to comment on an earlier draft in the mists of time where we had put together several different factors to look at, and matching funds was one of them. But there's a lot of different things, and I would think we would benefit from putting together a scoring system for the first review by the consultant that allows us to give them pretty good direction. You know, say some of the other factors we were thinking about was build long-term capacity of local communities, increasing sustainability and resiliency, or attend to the immediate, acute, and or continuing impacts of COVID-19. I think we really do need to do that, including leverage other private, federal, and or state funding.
So were you proposing we do that tonight?
I don't think we can do it tonight. I think we're too tired. But
I agree.
But I think we have to get there. So
okay, Lisa, time-wise, how soon do we have to get there?
Well, we have these applicants who submitted proposals mid-November, and they've been waiting for us to reply. We did tell them, we said that they could expect a decision within 90 days. We told them that we've extended that period and we're in a deliberation phase. But I think, you know, the sooner the better. I'll say that.
I'm talking about the criteria that Rich asked about. How soon do we need those?
Lisa, weren't there criteria in the RFP already that kind of fits with the list that Rich just talked about?
I believe so.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think that we need that to get back to the consultants.
That's my question. Okay. But we need to decide on that. We need to have a better idea of what that list looks like before the consultant actually puts out a request for proposals from the public.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Greg?
Could the consultants propose a draft criteria that then we edit and review and approve, as opposed to us coming up with it? Because I just feel like that's going to be crazy. And I mean, supposedly they're the professionals. They're the ones who are paying at least six figures to do this. So I would rather put in the RFP part of your deliverable first is that you propose a criteria for which these are evaluated on. And all of these meetings are recorded. There's enough in the public, you know, forum that they can pull ideas down from, and let them do the work.
And we did ask for that in the RFP. That's one of the expectations of the consultant.
Yeah. Great. So we don't even really need to get there then.
No, I think I would envision that they would propose the criteria for the legislature to review and comment on.
Okay, Shauna?
I was going to say what Greg said. Good job, Greg.
Okay. I think that to the extent that the small group of which Rich was a part came up with some proposed criteria, those ought to be forwarded to the RFP bidders for their consideration.
I put them in the chat so everybody can see them. I think we should kick them around some more because that was three legislators.
That wording was taken verbatim and put in the RFP, and all of the legislators reviewed the RFP before it went out. So this is what the consultants now have.
Okay. That was easy. Okay, so how much follow through, people? How closely and for how long do we want our consultant to ride herd on these successful grantees?
Can staff do any of this?
I thought the whole reason we had decided to go with a consultant is that staff couldn't do this.
Okay.
Dan?
That answers the question then.
Yeah.
So I was a little surprised in our meeting where we were reviewing these consultants' submissions that somebody from the administration, I honestly don't remember who, said, well, maybe we could set a limited amount of time and then anything that lasts a little bit beyond that, we can take care of. So I'm not suggesting, I was surprised to hear that, actually. Lisa, do you remember that? Do you have anything to say about that?
I honestly don't remember that conversation, but I don't remember a lot of things, so.
That's fine. No, I like I said, I'm not proposing that. Amy was there. That's right.
Well, in terms of the proposals, one proposal included like a 5-year, 4-year follow-up. Other proposals just did a year, and that was it. And so it was hard to compare apples to apples because of that.
Well, and I would submit that we ought to consider if we are giving people, say, until 2026 to complete the project and spend all the money, maybe a 5-year commitment from the consultant isn't out of the question. That's something we have to decide. I've got Shana and Annie.
I mean, I think once the funds are actually delivered, it would be nice, you know, at least biannually to have a check-in, because some of these projects, as much as we want them to get off the ground, there could be a matter of the funds aren't able to be spent because they couldn't come up with other funds. Maybe the project didn't go through. And I think it would be nice to hear how the monies went forward. Obviously, if it's a capital investment, then we'll be able to see that in our community. But I think it would be really nice for the consultant to come in every 6 months and tell us, give us an update on these projects.
Okay, Annie?
Yeah, I like what Shauna was saying for a number of reasons. One, you know, is they could need some more help. I'm not saying financial help, but do they need what, you know, if their projects, you know, stalled or whatever, you know, it is, if it's a longer term thing, then another thing that we brings up another thing that we might want to have in here is, you know, if they haven't, say it's a construction project of some sort and it's 3 years down the road and nothing has happened, you know, like what are we going to do? Is it something that's just going to come back to the legislature and we decide that, you know, when there's an issue like that, that the consultants bring this back and say, you know, I don't think there's any, you know, they've lost this grant, they've lost this other funding, they've run into this, and, you know, I don't think they're going to go anywhere. Do we, and the money hasn't been distributed, or do we, you know, how long do we wait, I guess? And are there other programs then we want to give that money to?
Thanks, Annie. Bill?
I hate to bring up the words Oakcrest Road, but I must. You have to be very careful and look at what the Village of Lansing's been through with a builder who is now in year 11, I think, of trying to build 4 or 5 little buildings, apartment buildings. I'm sure you've seen it before, maybe you haven't been down that road. So you should have to give some serious thought to how to maintain control over the money flow unless they're really meeting their obligations, no matter what it is.
Well,
you can't just write a check and then, you know, wait and see what happens. That's just my advice from having put up for a few years dealing with this guy.
Yeah, that's a good point, Bill. And so if you're going to be doing like progress payments out of on these grant awards, that's going to be something that's going to require attention from the consultant and or the county more frequently than every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I have a question, I guess, more than a comment, and that is, are there provisions that are generally included when we give out a grant that explain what the consequences are if the grant's not used properly? I mean, is there something that obligates the grantee to either use the funds as they've promised to do or else they're on the hook to return them? Does anybody know?
Okay. Well, I can take a stab at that. I mean, typically we have for each time we offer funding, you know, an over target request, say, to a community agency, we enter into a contract with that agency, and there are contractual obligations lined out in that contract. If they fail to meet those terms, or if they can't expend the money toward the public use that they said they were going to, they never voucher for it and the money doesn't get spent. And if the money is used toward other means, they're in violation of the contract, that would be picked up presumably during an audit.
So would we be following that model? Because that seems like it would be desirable.
Yes, we would. There would be contractual obligations for this funding.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be desirable. That is going to be a very long commitment with the consultant to follow up on that for a long time. And I guess I don't know the ins and outs of how much, you know, checking up needs to happen and all the, you know, the details, but maybe there's some middle ground where they're not, you know, checking up and giving us reports every month, but it's, you know, sort of like once in the middle of the project and then once at the end of the project or something. But yeah, if we have, you know, 50 different grants, then that's a lot to follow up on for sure. But I think we need to have that. So.
Okay. Randy.
I agree with Amanda that part of the response needs to fall on the people getting the grant. It would seem to me that the $10,000 to $25,000 grant would need a lot less oversight than with the bigger ones.
Right.
But it would seem to me that in the grant award, you would put requirements in there very specifically. It says, okay, you said this is going to happen, and for the grants that are getting $1 million or whatever it may be, you would say we need bi-monthly, bi-yearly reports documenting your steps as to what you did, and as part of the award, you have to follow through with that.
Well, on larger projects, I would say that we would probably be best served to have those reports at least on a quarterly basis.
Right. Or whatever it's.
Anybody else? Okay, I think we've ground you all down to exhaustion, except for Dan.
I just want to let you know, I just looked up the RFP, and I sent it to all of you. I sent you in two emails. One is just the list of like a dozen criteria for those that don't want to spend a lot of time. The second email has the full thing in there, so check it out when you get a chance. I think you will be pleasantly, you will think that the criteria that's in there is, I think you'll find them good.
Okay. All right, so question, Lisa, do you have what you need?
I think we do, more or less.
Well, what's the less that we haven't addressed?
It seemed as though the only outstanding question, or you took a vote on it, to take the consultant fees from the recovery fund. And it was 7 out of the 12 of you.
But the bidders don't need to know what the decision is on that. And clearly we don't have all 14 of us here to make that decision.
I thought we were going to bring that one back to the legislature.
Right, right.
Yep. Yeah, so I think we have enough information to.
I have a question.
Okay.
I had Jim Fabian join us tonight in purchasing, and I just wanted to make sure between Lisa and Jim that we have direction on what we're going to put forth exactly for the respondents to the RFP. If we're doing an addendum, if we have additional specs and questions for them to answer. I thought while we had everybody in the room, I'd ask that question in case I missed it tonight.
Well, Rick, I think we really need to get some more clarification on what kind of timeline we're going to request that the consultants base their dollar response on. As we know, some people looked at this as a 36-month timeline. Some people looked at it as a 12-month timeline, and that's why right. we see you on all of these responses between $200,000 and $1.3 million. So I think we need to clarify that.
Well, I thought that top the high bidder was looking at 5 years, not 36 yeah. months.
That's right.
I mean, let's see, 36 months would take us to December of 2025. If we want to give them until December of 2026, we need it to be 48 months. Do we really want to give them that amount of time?
That's why I thought I would ask the question. So they all have a chance to compare apples to apples, since now we kind of have apples to oranges. Right. We ought to go back and tell them in some form of addendum of what our timeline really is, so that they're all giving us information with the same time frame.
Okay. Does anybody have any thoughts on what our timeline ought to be? Greg?
My thoughts would be, is there a way that we could ask them for a 24-month or 36-month engagement and then to price out what their, you know, years 4, 5, and 6 would be on a cost per year basis, just so that we knew that, but we had a shorter time horizon, and then we could, if we wanted to continue them, or let's say we've solved the staffing, you know, shortage in the next 3 years and we can bring it back in-house for review and administration. Do we really want to commit to a longer term? But it would be nice to know what they would sort of price those additional sort of optional years out at.
Okay, I've got Greg, Mike, and Lee. Greg just spoke. Yes. All right. This is my third meeting today, folks. I'm a little tired. Mike.
I was hoping for a much, much shorter timeline, like a year. if we could get this done in 8 months, I'd be for that.
Yeah, but the done part isn't really done until we've verified that they've gone through the period of time that they projected they need, and we're sure that they've spent the money as they said they would. So that's not ever going to be 1 year.
I understand. Okay. I understood.
Yep. Okay. Lee?
You just may have to say it's up to 36 months, and, you know, to Mike's point, you know, the bulk of this may all be spent within a year. If you have a lot of small projects and pretty focused objectives, it may not be a long time. Yeah, you may have 2 or 3 large ones that you're going to want to provide some oversight on and have some reporting if it's more complex. But year 2, 3, 4 may not amount to much, for depending on what you get back for applications.
That's a good point, too. Again, it's totally unpredictable. Henry?
Yes, we can set up, so what Greg said, we can set up for them awarding the fees, awarding the things, and then doing maintenance after years 2, 3, and 4. Because some people did that in terms of their applications.
Is that what you needed, Jim?
Yeah, I think that would cover it. I think it would be established like an 18-month window, and then have extensions of like 6 months periods that we can keep them engaged after that for reporting purposes.
Okay. Randy?
This is really 2 steps, right? There's the step where they're evaluating the proposals, and that's going to take maybe a year, maybe less. And then to Henry and is it Jim?
Jim.
Yep.
Jim's comment. That you could do, you know, 6 month extensions. What would you charge for another 6 months of managing these accounts? Because you may have a list of, you may not have to track them all. Some you may have to track for 3 years. Some you have to track for a year. So you're going to have a big mix of those things. So.
Right. The smaller ones are likely to be one time. Yeah. Dan?
So this is very general and it's from memory, but I want to say they're the first step that the, there's a couple of steps that the award, you know, the consultant is going to do. One is to get clarity with us. That might take a few weeks. I don't know. Then they're going to advertise. and they're going to help applicants. They're going to do some proactive, a bunch of them talk about this, proactive applications going to underrepresented populations to solicit and elicit applications. So that's a, you know, several month process there, varies. Then the applications go out. Then there's a month or two or three when they come back. Then there's a month or two or three when they're going to be reviewed. So there's, you know, I just want to set people's expectations here. There's before the first dollar goes out the door, I don't know, 6 months, 9 months from the time that we hire somebody, you know, somewhere in that range. And if anybody else that was involved in this, if you want to say, no, that's not quite right, Dan, speak up. That was very general. Okay, 6 to 9 months.
You must have nailed it, Dan. You must have.
Somewhere in that range. And then what? If we're leaving enough, it's hard to imagine people getting too many projects done sooner than a year. I mean, that's fairly quick.
Yep.
So a year and a half is probably, you know, doable but ambitious, you know.
Well, there was a difference in the proposals in terms of the timing. Like the more expensive proposal drew out the process much longer. And one proposal drew out the process for like 6 months. And that was it. Depending on the number of proposals we also received too.
Yes. So I'm thinking that based on the discussion we just had, we just settle on, did we just settle on 18 months or 36 months? What did we just settle on?
Really, 18 months.
18 months. So if we,
with extensions.
With extensions. So we're going to go back to the consultants now and say that we're looking for an 18-month proposal. They're going to have to tailor that timeline to try to fit that.
Well, they are going to want to know, well, what about your longer-term projects? We're going to have to, you know, do you want us to monitor for compliance? And I mean, yeah, we probably do. But on the other hand, that's going to be much less time consuming than actually getting the grant proposals out the door.
But at this moment, we're only paying them for 18 months. Is that right? Is that what we just decided?
I think that would be the baseline. I'm sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
I think that would be the baseline. Yes, 18 months.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Anything else? Lisa, Jim, Rick, do you have what you need?
I think we're good.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, then, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
For your patience.
Thanks for staying late.
That was a good meeting. We needed to do this, you know?
Okay. And I think we are adjourned. Thank you all.